Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The University of South Dakota continues its three-week event, Human Cargo Trafficking in the 21st Century. It's sponsored by the Criminal Justice and International Studies programs. Tonight at 6, the program looks at challenges close to home with a conversation about sex trafficking in South Dakota. Kevin Colliner is Assistant U.S. Attorney for South Dakota. He joins us now on the phone from Sioux Falls. Kevin, welcome to In the Moment.
Well, thank you, Lori. It's a pleasure and honor to be on your show today.
Let's begin for the people who get a little confused about how this all works, what the U.S. Attorney for South Dakota does and who that is.
Well, the U.S. Attorney for South Dakota is Randy Seiler, and what we do as an office is we prosecute federal crimes, and we also defend and represent the federal government when either the government is sued or when we're suing someone on behalf of the government. So we're the prosecutors and the lawyers for the federal government within the District of South Dakota. And our state is one where the state is a single district. Other states have multiple districts within their state, but we're a single district state.
So what constitutes a federal crime then when we are looking specifically at human trafficking?
Well, there are a number of federal statutes that come to play. And really, the genesis of the federal government's role in human slavery dates back to after the Civil War. There were a number of statutes put into place that criminalized human slavery, and that still many of those remain on the books. Now, there are also a number of more modern statutes that were passed in the last 20 years or so that criminalize what we tend to think of as more modern forms of human slavery, and that involves both labor trafficking and sex trafficking. So to make a case a federal case, you know, the old question, why are you making a federal case out of this, it generally tends to involve some interstate means. Now, in the human trafficking context, that's fairly easy for the government to prove. It doesn't require interstate travel. That's kind of a misnomer. When we talk about human trafficking, most people think that means we are required to prove some interstate movement or even international movement. So the trafficking term is somewhat of a misnomer. All that we're required to prove is that it's in or affecting interstate commerce. And so that can be proven if, say, interstate highways are used or if internet resources are used, sometimes even products that pass from state to state. So that tends to be one of the easier elements for us to prove. And so that's, you know, the federal government's role in human trafficking.
What are some of the more difficult elements to prove? If that's one of the more straightforward one, where are the challenges in making a case stick?
You know, these cases require that we, if it's an adult victim, that we prove that there's been some level of force, fraud, or coercion that's been employed to cause someone to engage either in, you know, a sex act, if we're talking about sex trafficking, or some kind of forced labor. And so, you know, generally the challenge is proving that level of force. Now, it doesn't require physical force. It can be psychological force, just so that it's such that it would cause a reasonable person in the victim's position to, you know, feel compelled to engage in these acts. Now, if it's a minor, if someone under the age of 18, the federal law does not require the government to prove that that individual was coerced. So it becomes, it's one less element for us to prove in those cases. But, you know, you ask about the challenges. And the real right. challenge is that this is a crime where victims don't tend to raise their hands to be counted. You know, look, if someone steals your bicycle out of your garage, you're going to call the police and you're going to want them to do something about it. You're probably even going to call and follow up if they haven't come over to your house quick enough. These are cases where there's a lot of shame and embarrassment involved. And oftentimes the victims are people who've had bad experiences with law enforcement in the past. And so and then there's also the added element that they're often frightened of their trafficker. And so The real challenge is finding these crimes and then finding those who are willing to seek justice and go through that process.
And they may have been told for months or even years, stories that are not true about law enforcement and what will happen to them as well, I'm guessing.
Well, that's certainly true. And we've seen that in, for instance, a labor trafficking case that we prosecuted that involved a number of folks from the Philippines. They were really told stories about what would happen if they encountered law enforcement. They'd be deported and they'd be treated terribly. And then, of course, oftentimes when we're talking about sex trafficking, we're often dealing with young victims who may have a child of their own. And so they're worried about the implications for them and their child if they come to law enforcement. You know, will I lose my kid? Or they may have been involved in some ancillary crimes, you know, drug abuse and prostitution itself, and so they're concerned about that. So,
well, let's just ask the question: can they lose their children?
Well, you know, that's not a process that my office would be involved in, but you know, certainly, Child Protective Services, they look at conditions that children are being raised in, and so. You know, is it a rational concern that these young people have? Certainly. And, you know, that's where it comes into play, our coordination with a number of different groups throughout the state to try to consolidate these resources and line up the resources that these folks need. One thing I've learned, I grew up in South Dakota, and one thing I've learned in dealing with these cases is there are a lot of desperately alone, desperately poor people in our communities who need access to certain resources. And so, I mean, one thing that I think we've done well in South Dakota is we've formed a lot of partnerships, and we talk about what we call a victim-centered approach in these cases. And
right.
What that means to me is to look at the needs of the victims first, and then try to build a case based upon their cooperation. And so sometimes we'll encounter, say, a young woman who has been homeless and maybe addicted to drugs, and what she might need first and foremost is not an interview with law enforcement. It might be some medical care, some mental health treatment. And so we have tried to forge those relationships to get folks those resources.
How extensive do we have a sense? How extensive is labor trafficking in the state of South Dakota?
You know, I think labor trafficking is a crime that happens a lot more than we know about. Sex trafficking's gotten a lot of press in the last, 5 to 10 years or so. But certainly there's also a large number of labor trafficking cases out there. I prosecuted one large-scale case, but that's been going on about 8 or 9 years now since we did that case. These are cases that often involve foreign nationals as victims, often people who are very concerned about their immigration status, and you know, concerned about what happens when they come forward. So that makes them, unfortunately, in many ways, ripe for victimization, and also makes it difficult for us to investigate and find those cases. But I will say this, I mean, there's a number of agencies, state and federal agencies, that are very vigilant when it comes to these reports. That includes the Department of Homeland Security, which most people think of as the agency that goes out and tries to find and arrest illegal immigrants and get them deported. Well, they're also an agency that's very vigilant about finding and investigating labor trafficking. That's a role that they take very seriously, and they've been a good partner for us.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kevin Colliner. He's Assistant U.S. Attorney for South Dakota, and he's with us as part of, he's in Vermilion for Human Cargo Trafficking in the 21st Century. That's tonight at 6. If you'd like to see him there at USD, it's part of a 3-week offering that they are having in Vermilion. And Kevin Colliner, I'm wondering, we talked last week about some of the warning signs and how South Dakota citizens can be on the lookout for victims of sex trafficking. And I'm curious about labor trafficking and what some of those warning signs might be and what people do if they are suspicious of that.
Well, I mean, the things that I would point out in terms of red flags. Do you see individuals, perhaps at certain businesses, that seem to be working around the clock? I mean, that's one issue. A case we prosecuted involved a hotel, and we discovered through an investigation that there was one woman who had worked something like 138 hours in a seven-day period at that hotel. Well, that means she was virtually working around the clock all week long. Are there folks who appear to be very frightened of their employers? We often see in these labor trafficking cases people who have had their citizenship or their visa documents taken away from them. Their passports have been confiscated. So folks who are concerned about their identification or don't have identification of any sort. And those are the sorts of things we look for. And then oftentimes when a broader investigation would take place, we'd bring in a group like the Department of Labor who would go in and do a wage and hour analysis, or the Department of Homeland Security that would interview folks. But, what I often tell folks from the community is if they see something that they perceive as odd or concerning, give us a call and we'll sort it out. I would rather have folks call us than to try to sort it out themselves and then give us a call later. We always want to know, and we can discern whether it fits within these statutes.
One of my things that when you say that brings up in my mind is immigration reform nationwide and misinformation about it, fear about it, and then actually how things are changing. Do you anticipate, an uptick in cases or an uptake in anything over the summer that might be down the road for us?
Well, my office has not seen any sort of uptick. Look, the same statutes at play that have been at play for many years are still on the books, and so those are the statutes that we enforce as an office, the cases that we prosecute. And, from administration to administration, there may be different priorities, and those priorities are, of course, important. But our task, career prosecutors in our office that, don't change from administration to administration, is to do our best to investigate and prosecute federal crimes. And that hasn't changed. And this is now the third administration I've been a part of in this job. And I haven't seen that basic role change over those administrations.
What are some of the unique ways that human trafficking manifests itself in the state?
Well, I think there's a couple things at play in South Dakota. The first thing I would note, we are often looked at, something I'm very proud of, we're often looked at as a national leader in how we go about investigating and prosecuting these cases. And sometimes that's reflected in just the sheer number of cases we've had for a relatively small district like ours, population-wise. We've prosecuted, I think, somewhere north of maybe 50 defendants for human trafficking in the last 5 or 6 years, which, ranks us fairly high. I think that's largely because we have such dedicated state, local, and tribal law enforcement who are out there looking for and building these difficult cases. It's been a priority not just for my office, but for the Sioux Falls Police and the Sheriff's Office and many of our partners, Rapid City, many of our partners, both state, local, and tribal, statewide. So that's an indication that if you look for it and if you look for it correctly, you'll find it anywhere you are. Mm. There's also some uniqueness about South Dakota in the sense that we have some of the poorest counties in the United States in our district. And those counties, it's no surprise to those of us who deal with these issues on a federal level, they align with many of the reservation communities in our state. So It's also, I think, no coincidence that I would say of the victims that I have worked with in these cases, at least 50% and perhaps more have been enrolled members in those tribal communities. And that is just a reality that we face, a very sad reality in the state, that we have a vulnerable population because of poverty and, frankly, because of high levels of drug abuse and sex abuse in those communities. So that's a something that we need to acknowledge, I think, as a state, and also it's something, well, it's something we see reflected just in the demographics, that there's a pockets in this state that are very vulnerable to these sorts of crimes.
And we hear about this frequently, about women from the Native American community that are much more vulnerable to sexual assault and sex trafficking than in other places. What's really being done to sort of, you know, resolve that issue and address it?
Well, in terms of what my office has done, we have done our best to do, well, we have done trainings on all 9 reservations for law enforcement, and we've had community meetings and things of that nature, try to educate folks, not just in tribal law enforcement, but also in the community about the prevalence of this particular issue. And so knowing that it exists and that it's a issue in our state, I think, is step one. And, you know, step two is to vigorously and aggressively investigate and prosecute these cases whenever and wherever they arise. We have prosecuted cases that have originated in some of those communities, but we've also prosecuted a number of cases where girls and young women from those communities have found their way into larger cities like Sioux Falls, like Rapid City, and have been exploited there. So,
challenges in prosecuting it when we're talking about something on reservation land?
Well, you know, we have federal jurisdiction for major crimes in those communities. So there's not a jurisdictional challenge to us going in and prosecuting those cases. And, you know, there are no challenges that I've at least seen that are, that differ from any other sex trafficking prosecution or investigation. The challenges are all the same in terms of the shame and the, you know, the fears and concerns of victims, and also the basic needs of those young women.
Our guest has been Kevin Colliner. He's Assistant U.S. Attorney for South Dakota, tonight as part of Human Cargo Trafficking in the 21st Century at the University of South Dakota at 6 o'clock. You can hear him speak. Kevin Colliner, you've been generous with your time. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.